Welcome back to Stitch Files with Barrett in America. We thank you for joining us. And as always, if you're checking out the YouTube, make sure you subscribe, leave a comment, give a thumbs up, make sure you share with your friends. And wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you rate it, review it. It does help push us up into the algorithm and make us more viewable, which we want to be famous. So please do that. Just kidding. All right. I'm Brandon.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Bob.
And we are Stitch Files.
Here in our beautiful Archdale, North Carolina studio.
Yeah. So it's
nobody knows where Archdale is.
Yeah. But LA.
It is in North Carolina. We call it LA. Lower Big Archdale.
City. Big city. So today's podcast, we're going to be talking about starting an embroidery business. So sometimes we get questions from screen printers or people wanting to start an embroidery business. What does it take? So we're going to dive into that today. We got quite a few questions, so we'll try to hit all the topics. So, Sarah, I think you're starting this one off.
Yes. The first question is embroidery still lucrative? yeah. Thoughts?
Yes. You know,
next topic.
It's hard to find information on the interwebs about the commercial embroidery market. And
it's also hard to say that.
Yeah, it is. It is for me. There's something called Market Watch that I found on online, and they wanted you to buy this study, which I was going to buy it. It was like $500, and I thought, well, maybe not.
When was this? Recently?
Mm-hmm. I looked this morning trying to find.
That's called a scam, brother.
Well, there's a bunch of them on there too, and I don't know how accurate it is. I don't know. So
what are they doing in this study? Are they just polling people? Like,
well, they actually had all the major commercial machine manufacturers on there, and we're talking commercial. Let me interject. It's commercial machines. The home market is an entirely different market, and that's going to be a separate podcast later on down the road. Something we want to do is there's a home market and something I call a crossover market, the commercial market, but we'll get into that at a later date. But this study by Market Watch, according to them, is the commercial embroidery machine market is expected to grow between 2021, this year, and 2026. I have no idea how they know that, but that's what they said. I did not know this, that the commercial market is an $860 million market. All right, that's what's spent.
People purchasing goods? Is that?
That's what I take it. I'm sorry I don't have better information, but it's just literally impossible to find it. But it is expected to grow, and it is up about 1.5% from last year.
That's
pretty good with with COVID last year.
Yeah. Well, so I will tell you, I've got some customers too who small businesses, and this is going to go into the home embroidery thing, but people have bought machines during COVID to work at home.
Yes, we got a lot of people doing that.
Yeah, Etsy stores and whatever. And I think that is booming right now. But that dabbles a little bit into the home market. But just to say, it is lucrative. I mean, people have made a nice income during this weird time with embroidery. So,
you know, even last year when things weren't very good, and you weren't here for most of last year, but
that's right. Medically induced coma.
Right. But business was good last year. And we did not have – there were a few businesses that went out of business, but most of them didn't. They survived and even thrived.
Yeah.
And bought machines. So you can take this Market Watch study for what it's worth.
I don't believe
it. If Market Watch is – if they're listening, I'm not knocking you. It just – I didn't want to pay $500 for your study. Sorry.
But yeah. Maybe make it – $250, and we might have bought it. Yeah,
but anyway, from a seat of the pants feeling from us,
I've got one of those right now.
it seems to be good. I mean, we're selling every machine that we can make. Our customers seem to be doing very well, and they're buying. We've had a lot of repeat business this year from customers who bought machines at the beginning of the year, and they're buying their second one. In some instances, they're buying their third one. So,
I've had customers that just bought a machine like at the beginning of this year and have already ordered another. I mean, this is a multi-head machine and already buying another one. So that tells you something. I mean, if you're not buying it just to have it sit around, you want that needle running so it's making money. And to me, that's lucrative.
But even when, as long as I've been here, even when business is bad, it's not that bad. It can be slow. you know, in 2008 when the economy had a big hiccup, that was bad. But we still managed to sell machines, and we still managed to keep the doors open. So it's not like, oh my God, it's going away. Embroidery's never going to, you know, we're never going to see it again. So
people will always want to like personalize what they're wearing. Yeah. Like that's always going to be interesting for people. So I think it's lucrative.
Yeah, that's a good point. Personalization, since probably 2005, about that time, the cap market has exploded.
Yeah,
everybody
absolutely.
Wears a cap.
Yep.
I mean, most people are sewing caps, and if you're not sewing caps, you're losing money.
But. Yeah, get on it. And I will not take a bath nor towel myself off without a monogram towel. So sell to me if you'd like. And that is facts.
Take so, you know, the bottom line is in your direct apparel, it is growing. And we see it growing. We see the suppliers are doing well when they can get product.
Yeah.
Again, I know a lot of our a lot of the companies supplying, you know, caps and garments, of course, they're having a hard time getting goods because of the shipping fiasco. But other than that, you know, we're not telling you to run out and buy an embroidery machine. But if you're thinking about getting into it and you're wondering, you know, is it something, can I stay busy, can I make money? I'm going to say a resounding yes, according to our business and everyone else's.
And I've talked to people, too, who they don't even advertise. Like they've got strict clientele that they've used for years. They're not even putting this out. They're not advertising their business. If you open up that door, sometimes you can have way more business than you even can handle. I think that's important to think about, too. I mean, I talked to somebody yesterday in that scenario, like, we don't even market, and we need a new machine. And, you know, just imagine if you put your name out there. I think you can do well in this business.
Well, and that, you know, it's a lot of people ask, where do I find customers? And I know when your mother and I had our business, you know, we started out with, you know, doing some personalization, monogramming, things like that. We started doing schools. We did a ton of schools, screen printing and embroidery. And then we got into these dance shops. And these
dance moms
will spend money on their little dance bunnies.
I'm going to go edit this part out.
She's like,
I'm wincing too. I don't know where you're going with this. These dance bunnies.
They put their name on
there. What the crap's a dance bunny?
It's the little girls that dance.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that's what they were called.
Your daughter danced.
I've never called her dance bunny. Trust me.
But
where were you going with that?
Dance moms.
I already went there, and I'm at the end of that road.
Okay, cool.
So,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that you made that point just now that, you know, customers will come to you when they find out you have an embroidery machine. And we didn't market either. We didn't spend a nickel on advertising or marketing. And, you know, in a small town, like we're in a town of 11,000 people where we live, where our office is. And
studio.
And the studio here. Yep. And we know, you know, a lot of people. I mean, Brandon Kyle grew up here. They have friends, and once they find out you have an embroidery machine, oh, can you do this? Can you do this? And there's plenty of small businesses here. We were never at a loss for business. We always had business. And sometimes we had to turn it down because we were so busy.
Yeah, like you said, it came to a point where it was either you're going to go do this full time or we've got to give it up. And, you know, you had to make that choice. So I think
But we were, you know, we were a startup business, and we were a home-based business, you know, out of our garage. But let's just say if you're a screen printer, for example, or a gift shop, and you want to add embroidery, well, you already have the clientele.
Right.
So you have a customer base to pull from. So in my opinion, it's much easier for you because you already have clients. And you guys know this too. Most screen printers will say, I'm farming my embroidery out, and I
so
need to bring
many.
It in-house because every month I'm writing that check out to somebody, to my embroiderer, and he's making all the money.
Yeah. We get a lot of calls for that very reason. Like, I'm tired of sending this out. I want to learn and do it on my own.
So there's two types of business. There's somebody getting started in embroidery. And if you've never embroidered and you're a screen printer, you're kind of a startup too. But the one thing you don't have to worry about is the clientele or customers. You know, you've got the customer base to pull from. And, you know, it's, to me, that's an added comfort because you don't have to worry about where the customer's going to come from.
Yeah.
So when you're starting up, but I will say that most startups or people looking at embroidery, they always say, you know, I got people wanting me to do embroidery, or there's nobody in my town. And you know, I've never worried about competition or somebody in the town. You know, we didn't have much competition in embroidery here, but we had screen printing competition. Yeah. If you do a good job and price your embroidery right, and do what you say you're going to do, delivery time, the customers will come to you.
Yeah.
Word of mouth is big, too. Exactly. If you do a good job and have a good product, people will come back.
Yeah. And if you don't do a good job, that you'll find out about that, too.
Yeah. People are often more likely to complain than they are to give you praise. So you can crash and burn. All right. So moving on. So what would somebody need to get started in embroidery?
Well, if obviously a machine. If you're starting from scratch, there's things that you're going to need that you don't know you need. You know, the machine, of course, is the biggest investment, but you're going to need some type of software to do lettering. You don't have to have software, but software is so inexpensive. And if you want to do names, you can do those names yourself. And we'll get into digitizing down here and logos here in just a minute. But an embroidery machine, supplies, you know, needles, backing, thread. I think one thing about embroidery that makes it a lucrative business is, let's say you want to start a taco truck.
And I've thought about it.
Yeah, I know you have. You've talked about that a lot.
It's on my dream board.
What do you have to buy? You have to buy
tacos and trucks.
You have to buy, well, that probably wasn't a good thing. That probably wasn't the right way to mention it, but you have to have stuff that'll spoil, right? I kind of, that's my point I'm getting at.
Yeah, I got you. You know, we're fine.
Your meat, yeah.
Perishables.
Your chicken, whatever. So, but you have to have that stuff on hand to cook it and make it.
That's how tacos work.
Yeah, tacos work.
Today on Taco Talk.
The nice thing about embroidery is your the garments you sew on, you know, shirts, caps, whatever it is you're sewing, you don't have to stock those.
Right.
You have to stock a lot of stuff other than backing and thread and the little bit of supplies that you need. So it's not like a business where you have to have a lot of stock in order, like Baird, and we have to stock millions of dollars worth of parts in order, because when people order a part, they don't want to say, you don't want to tell them, well, you know, it's going to take 6 months to get it. I mean, yeah. So with embroidery, the thread companies, probably there's one close to you where you live, you know, there's, you know, Madeira, Ganold, A&E. So, you know, getting thread is a 1 or 2 or 3 day shipment. Same thing with garments. I mean, when we were in business, we had Carolina Made in Charlotte.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you and I ran down there to pick up stuff if, you know, that we had a rush order. But you don't have to stock all that stuff. You don't have to stock a bunch of sizes. So I think that's a big advantage, too. You know, once you got your machine and your supplies, you just order your garments and you're ready to go.
Yeah. So I guess the overhead you'd say is it's not that expensive, really.
No. And you know, again, your biggest investment is your embroidery machine. And if you keep that thing running, it's going to pay for itself,
yeah,
you know, pretty quickly if you've got the business. So, and you know, we get asked, you know, how do I know what size machine to buy? And that's an excellent question, because all manufacturers make 2, 3, or even 4 single head embroidery machines. And I know if you're new to the industry and you look at them, it's, why is this one different from this one and this one? And it can get very confusing. And we're just going to give you the basics. And from our standpoint, we make 3 single head embroidery machines. And the smallest one is called the XL, which I always thought that was ironic because it's the smallest machine. But all of our machines, from our single heads up to the biggest machine that we sell, has the exact same sewing head.
Yep.
So to me, that's a big plus with Baird, because all the parts for the sewing head are interchangeable. Most of the hoops are interchangeable for the most part, you know, depending on field size. But the XL has a smaller field size. It's going to have a 10 by 14 sewing field. So if you're going to do a lot of jacket backs, probably not the machine for you. But for left chest and caps, it's the perfect machine.
Yeah.
And it's at a price point. It's our least expensive machine. But
15 needles. I don't know if you mentioned that or not. But
they're all 15. Yeah. Thank you. They are.
Good point.
They're 15 needles. You know. Do you need 15 needles? No, you don't need 15 needles. Is it nice to have? Absolutely. And the reason you have 15 needles is you can keep 7 or 8 of your common colors on there.
Right.
And then, you know, use the other 7 or 8 for your custom colors. But then we go with the Pro 3, which is our most popular machine. It's got a 15x17-inch sowing field, a little bit bigger. We sell more of those probably than the XL and the CO1 bridge machine put together. And then the one behind Brandon is the CO1, and that's the big bridge machine with the 17x18-inch sowing field. And it's built on our multi-head chassis. So it is a big machine, and that's not one you're going to put in your bedroom. So you need to.
No.
We have people that put them in their garage, but you're not going to carry it upstairs.
Isn't it like 800 pounds?
Yeah, it's huge.
No big deal.
not for us.
Yeah,
but it's if you need that big sewing field, if you're doing a lot of jackets, split front jerseys, you could do most of that on the Pro 3. But it's nice to have that little bit of extra room. So,
you know, the table's nice on that machine too. Not that you can't, you know, add that on to the others, but it's a workhorse. Like, it's my favorite of the single heads. I don't know why. I guess because it's just a monster.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just fun to sew.
Yeah.
I can't tell you why either. I mean, I love all of them. Usually when I'm sewing caps, I'll throw them on the XL. But I've been using the CO1 here lately for some stuff, just because we haven't had one in here for a while. Have we had one since you've been here?
Yes,
we had one, didn't we?
Did we?
Maybe not.
You did have one in here, but I don't know when you came.
I've had two in here, but I don't know if she was here when we had one.
Fella in Florida bought the one that was in here.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. You were here because the guy from Easy Haul or whatever came and hauled it down.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Your customer down in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So.
Anything else on the
machines? I mean, you know, another thing to consider too is the physical size of the machine. And where are you putting it? Are you putting it in your house? You're not going to buy a CO1 for that. Even though the CO1 will go through a 32-inch doorway, I mean, in our studio here, we have a 36-inch doorway back here that we take the forehead in and out. All of us push it in and roll it out. And the same thing with the CO1. So they'll fit through the doorway. But again, I don't know if you want an 800-pound machine in your house. Even if you get it in there. But the XL, the smaller machine, has a smaller footprint, and it's nice for smaller areas. You know, I had one in my den when I was doing digitizing. I kept it in a den.
Oh, yeah.
The nine. Even. Yeah. We called it the junior then. I had one of those. I forgot about that. I bought one of those. And you don't even know it's there. It doesn't take up a whole lot of room. But the Pro 3, a lot of people can, you know, you can put those in your house, in a business or whatever. So, but if you're cramped on space, you might want to look at the smaller machine. And again, the sewing speed's the same.
Yep.
Operating system is the same. The cap system is the same. The only difference really is the physical size
and your field size.
Another question we get is training. How and where does training happen?
On a single head machine, which is what we're talking about for startups, and that's not to say you can't, you can buy a multi head for startup, and we've had people who've done that. Now with the multi head machines, training comes with them. With the single head machines, it is an additional cost. If you have multiple Baradin machines, you probably don't need training.
Yeah.
These automats or the controller really hasn't changed that much.
Yeah, you think about the older machines, most of your icons on there are the same or very similar. It's just the touch screen's nice, and I don't know.
They're quicker, and they're USB, where the old ones were floppy disks. But, we come to you for training. Technician comes out. The machines are ready to sew out of the box, but it's nice to have a technician go over it. They've made a long journey from Japan. And most of the time, there's nothing that rattles loose or happens to them, but it's good to have a technician go over it and just make sure the timing's right and do a couple of checks on it. And if you're new, you're going to need training. So he's going to spend the rest of the time training you how the automat works. And when I say automat, I'm talking about the controller. That's what we call that is the, you probably can't see it, but it's where you push the buttons and make the thing go and load your designs right there.
Visible on the camera.
Thank you, Vanna.
You're welcome. Can I get a dress and some light up letters and numbers? Cool.
So, they'll train you on the operation of the machine, and operating the machine is easy. As Brandon said, it's icon based. You load your design, you set the colors, you make sure it fits inside the hoop, which there are some safeguards to keep you from sewing outside the hoop.
Yeah, do a trace.
Yeah.
Do what's called a perimeter trace. Make sure you got bobbin in there. And really, once you push the button, you don't have to stand there and babysit it. It kind of does its own thing. If it breaks a thread, it's going to stop. If it runs out of bobbin, it's going to stop. You just repair the thread break, and it'll take off where it ended. Same thing with the bobbin. So,
yep. And the training, I think, especially if you're starting up, I mean, it's hands-on. You know, they're going to walk you through loading the design, and I think it's important. Some people maybe want to neglect that just to save some money, but it doesn't cost that much, and I think it's extremely valuable for what you're getting.
Yeah, and they're going to teach you hooping
yeah.
and how to put your cap attachment on and hoop a cap. And there is a learning curve with embroidery like there is anything else. But you know, there's so many videos now from us and everyone else on YouTube that if you just watch the videos, and everybody kind of has their own technique how they do things. And, you know, you can always call us for help. I'm happy to help. Brandon will help. Sarah, any of us here will help if you've got a question about how to hoop something or a particular item.
We also have the tech support line that people can call.
Yeah.
Leave a message in the queue. Technician will help you with your issue over the phone. So that's helpful.
Billy Chestnut up in Cleveland, he's really good at techniques. He managed a big embroidery shop. He does some digitizing, so he's a good guy if you're having a particular issue with something.
He made the cool tiger on the intro video.
Yeah, he's a good digitizer. We're happy to have him. So
it's my favorite design ever. All right, so we sort of already talked about it, but what about supplies that we would need and different types of backing? We'll talk about that a little bit. So,
yeah, Sarah, you want to talk about the supply kit that we sell?
Yeah, so we have a startup package that we have partnered with Madeira on. It has 15 cones of thread from Madeira, random but popular colors, I think.
Yeah.
It has different amounts of backing. It has backing for caps. It has water soluble backing.
Topping, water soluble topping.
Oh, topping.
Yeah.
What else does it have?
Cutaway backing.
Tearaway backing. Cutaway.
Two or three different. And it's not just four or five pieces. It's It's a nice kit. We've got one, and this will be a podcast at some point where we'll do a little show you guys what you get in a startup kit.
Yeah, I might can throw up some video just going over the startup kit just to overlay over this audio. So maybe check that out. Don't hold me to it.
Yeah.
You might be watching it right now. Maybe
when
not.
When this goes live, you'll know that it's live.
Who said that?
Some bald-headed idiot, I know, beside the left.
So I always like to say that it's things that you need that you don't know you need. There's even snips in there, ruler.
Yeah.
It's a pretty comprehensive.
Bobbins.
A whole gross of bobbins, which is 144 bobbins, which will last you a long time. So, and you don't have to buy the supply kit from us. I mean, you can buy it from, Madeira Ganold, any other reputable, companies that sell thread and embroidery supplies. So there's plenty of them out there. We're partnered with Madeira, so we tend to recommend them. But if you have another brand that you like or you think it works better, please by all means support those folks too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also going back to the training too. These are supplies too you need for your training, just to have on hand for when your technician's showing you stitching a hat and different things. It's good to have all that stuff at hand, especially for the training.
Yeah, I think there's some puffy foam in there too, which is kind of nice to have.
Yeah, puffy's the new thing. Not Puff Daddy.
Is he still around?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Wait, you don't listen to Puff Daddy? He's still around.
Yeah, I just talked about where you can buy your supplies. And, like I said, Madeira has locations all through the U.S. Ganold is a good company.
American Infrared. From the embroidery store.
The embroidery store the road here in Winston-Salem. They sell a lot of embroidery supplies, backing. And talking about backing a little bit, that's another show that's a whole other supplies. Show. But, you know, you want to keep some cutaway backing, some tearaway backing. And, of course, if you're doing caps, I have seen people use tearaway backing and cutting it into strips, but there is a cap backing that's specifically for caps that's designed for caps that'll make your cap embroidery look a whole lot better. And it costs a little bit, of course, but it's just going to make the quality of your embroidery so much better. So, and I always tell people, don't buy the cheapest thread that you can get. Don't buy the cheapest backing. You know, don't pinch pennies there. Good supplies will make your embroidery look better.
Yeah, and that's what people are going to come back for. Exactly. They're not happy with it. You're not seeing them.
It'll set you apart from the person using the cheap stuff. Yep. So, you know, you've got this Ferrari of an embroidery machine here, and you don't want to put, you know, the cheapest gas, 20% ethanol or whatever in it. You want to put good stuff in it. It'll make your machine run better too if you use good quality thread and good quality bobbins. Whatever brand that you like is fine. Just make sure it's the best quality that you can get.
Agreed.
Are we at designs?
Yeah, we've kind of gone through this quicker than I thought we would.
Yeah, we did.
That's good.
We're acing it.
Yeah.
A+ for us.
Stock designs versus custom logos.
Yeah, and something else I didn't put on here either. If you're beginning, there's designs and there's there's monogramming and lettering too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where the software comes into, which we'll get to in just a minute. But you know, people will come to a show or they'll call us and they'll say, "Well, where can I get my designs?" Well, in the starter kit, there's also the
Dakota.
Collectible. What is it? How many designs is it? I can't remember. I should.
Is
know
it
this.
Like 5,000?
I think 5,000.
5,000 stock designs.
It's got a 5 in it.
Yeah, there's a 5.
I don't remember.
Well, they have different sizes. If you get the startup kit or the ESP kit, you're going to get 5,000 stock designs. And what a stock design is, it's a pre-digitized design that you literally just put it in your machine, set the colors, and sew it. Now you get a little book with it. Are they coming on CD? They're coming on CD?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you can download them too. You can, if you buy a design from Dakota, you can also download it from their website. You can buy them individually. But with this 5,000, it's a nice collection of designs. I looked through the catalog and it's
good.
It's not like they're slow sellers. They give you a really good assortment of designs.
Especially if you're doing stuff for like a team or schools, there's stock designs in there, like
for mascots.
Yeah, yeah. A bear.
Mm-hmm.
Cougar.
A cougar. You name it. It's probably in there.
Is there a honey badger in there?
I do think that there is, honestly. There? Yeah.
We'll have to sew that honey badger.
Yeah.
We'll honey do honey badger, badger shirts for our podcast next time. I'm just kidding. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, well, but it's a good kit. That catalog, I like looking through it. There's cool stuff in there.
You can always find something in there to sew. I know Jamie, what did we do for her? She had a party.
The martini glass.
Oh,
We found a design in there, and I kind of doctored it up a little bit and made some shirts for her. And it turned out really good. They're very good designs. They sew well. And if you don't see something in that book, you can always go online to Dakota, and you can find one on their website, and I don't know what they charge. It's anywhere from $10 to $25.
Yeah, it's very affordable.
But once you buy it, it's yours. But those are stock designs. And let's say if someone comes to you and says, "Hey, you know what? I want a honey badger with my name on it." Then you find that honey badger, you bring it into your software, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. You add a name to it, and take it to your machine and sew it. So that makes it simple.
Yeah.
Now, Sarah comes to me and says, "Hey, I've got a corporate logo that I want some shirts," and gives me her business card or gives me a letterhead or gives me some type of artwork. And she said, "Can you make it from this?" Yes, you can. That's called custom logos. Now, I will tell you this. It's always better to have vector artwork if you can. Because if you have the bitmap, I don't want to get into the graphics part of it too much here, but it's hard to digitize from. We're going to have I think James Timmons, he doesn't know it yet, but we're going to get him on
James, we're talking to you, bud.
On the podcast. He is a trainer with WillCom, and he can explain to you the right graphics files for digitizing And we'll just do a whole show about that. And I think it's going to be really interesting.
Digitizing is a whole new can of worms. And some people don't want to get into that, which I guess we can talk about too. There's always the option to send that off to get digitized, which is very affordable. And a lot of people do that because they don't want to mess with it to start up.
Right.
That's fine. But you, if you're able to do all that stuff in-house, you're kind of setting yourself apart from the competition, I would say.
Yeah, there's pros and cons. I mean, we'll get into that in just a minute. I've got my thoughts about it. And then there's no right or wrong. It just depends on how you want to approach it. But you have to have a piece of artwork, and it has to be digitized. And if you're not doing your own digitizing, and as a startup, I don't recommend that right off the bat.
Right.
But we can recommend digitizers to you that you can send that off, and they'll send you back a stitch file. And the embroidery machines, I've had people come to me and say, oh, well, what does that thing take? A Corel file, EPS file? I know. It's
Microsoft Paint.
PDF. Embroidery machines work on an XY axis.
They're like a CNC machine.
Kind in that that's that same basic concept where the pantograph moves from side to side and back and forth. So you can't just put a picture in there and have it sew it.
It's not an etch sketch.
It doesn't work that way, but it has to be turned into a stitch file, and that's what digitizing is. And as Brandon just said, you know, that a nominal fee, you can get it digitized. Most left chests, I don't know, $15-$20, whatever. Something like that. Now, then there's lettering and monogramming. Now, this you can do yourself. And we recommend, if you do not have software when you buy a machine, you probably don't, if it's your first machine. We sell Wilcom software. We're partnered with them. And we sell either just the lettering software or the lettering and editing. I recommend the lettering and editing. It allows you to merge designs, take pieces of one design and do cut and paste. You can kind of make a design, and you can do editing. If you have a design that has a trouble spot in it, you can go to that spot and maybe fix the stitches. And again, that's a whole nother show. We can talk about that for probably an hour.
Yeah.
But with the lettering and editing software, you're going to get about 200 fonts, I think is what it is, and the ability to convert true type fonts into embroidered fonts.
Yeah.
I know we were looking at our logo. We were trying to pick a font, and I think you had chosen a true type font.
Yeah. So if you can find a true, I mean, there's tons of free fonts online. Mm-hmm. If it is true type, you can then import that into your lettering and editing software and use it to create a stitch file.
Yeah. And the nice thing about it too, you can, if it's a true type font that you're going to use a lot, you can actually create the alphabet automatically. It'll ask you, is this a one-time thing? You just want it for this design, or do you want to create the alphabet? And it'll do the whole thing upper and lowercase automatically. That's pretty cool. And it does a very good job too. There's some fonts that just do not embroider well.
Yeah.
And you'll learn this when you get into it. Anything really, really small, if you try to do a really small script, and this is on any machine with any software, it's not going to do a really great job. So you'll know what you can and can't use. I will tell you that the fonts that Wilcom has, if you sew them at the recommended size, they are the best in the industry. And I've been around a long time, and there's some other good ones out there, but the Wilcom stuff is very, very good. And you don't have to do a lot of tweaking to them. But if you try to take a small block and make it 3 inches tall, it's not going to sew well.
Yeah.
So there are some rules that you have to follow.
And the good thing, too, about Wilcom, they offer training online all the time. There's videos on there. It's a good resource. And I point people there a lot because, you know, digitizing to me is, you know, I'm only so smart. I only have so much brain capacity. So go check out the experts. Don't talk to me.
Is your brain getting smooth?
Like your head, brother.
You've heard of smooth brain? You heard that?
No.
You didn't know this?
What's this?
You never heard anybody call it a smooth brain? Can we talk about it?
Yeah, you can talk about anything you want to. Talk about a honey badger for 10 minutes. Might as well go off this tangent.
Is it convolutions? Is it the more depressions you have in your brain? What do you call it? The more wrinkled your brain is, the smarter you are.
Convolutions?
That's not the right word, is it? The more...
Just crevasses. Say wrinkles.
Nooks and crannies.
Crevasses.
Yeah, crevasses.
Yeah, there you go. Crevasses. Because you have more brain area.
Surface area?
Yeah, brain. That's, yeah.
So
okay.
More knowledge.
You have more knowledge. Mm. So I had an x-ray. My brain just...
And you are a scientist, right?
Yes.
You are a neurosurgeon.
I am. So you had an x-ray okay. of your brain.
My brain. And it is very... It's like a brain.
You know x-rays
like
are for radio. Bones? Hmm? X-rays are for bones. You may have had a CT scan or an MRI.
Maybe. I wanted to know about... Because the smoother your brain, you're not very intelligent. So okay. If somebody calls you a smooth brain... You guys haven't heard this?
No. Is this a TikTok trend or something?
It's not. I thought.
You think he's on TikTok?
Yeah, I think he is TikTok.
I can dance.
Yeah. Cut to the next video. Where'd you hear this?
It's common knowledge. Well, for...
okay, here's how common knowledge works. If you've got a table of three people, common knowledge would be two of those three knowing it. If one knows it, uncommon knowledge. Smooth brain.
I think I called Jamie a smooth brain. She says, hey, thanks. I don't think she knew what it meant.
I don't know.
We're digressing.
Yeah, I don't know what it means. No. Moving on. Wilcom software. Get it. Smooth brain. No. We're going on.
All right.
Let's move on. I thought I was bad.
We talked about lettering and editing software. Lettering and editing.
Yes, they're two separate things. Wilcom is like a tiered system.
Yeah,
the higher you go, the more
access you get.
More, yes. Take it from here.
Yes,
my brain is very smooth. Yeah, basically, the higher you go, and it'll let you do the full digitizing. Basically, anything you ever want to do in the world of embroidery. Whereas the lettering and editing software, it doesn't limit you to. Basically text and making small tweaks to a design. That's basically the gist of it without going into another tangent.
About brains.
Yeah, fair enough.
But the Wilcom lettering is called keyboard lettering. So obviously you key it in, you pull it up on the screen, you size it, you have the ability to, curve it top to bottom, bottom top. You can stair step it. I mean, there's all kinds of templates in there. So when you bring it up on the screen and you're trying to maybe wrap it around a circle or put it under something, it's very easy to do. And again, it's very intuitive. And as Brandon said, they offer online classes. I think weekly. I don't want to speak for them.
Well, there's a library on there too of saved videos. You could go and pull something up from, I just want to know how to do this. Something common. I'm sure it's in the library. But it's, to me, it's overwhelming. Like when you pull up Wilcom, there's a lot going on. But like I said, you've got that tool to go and educate yourself on it. And it is another skill set as opposed to just embroidery. I think digitizing is another skill set.
Yeah. And that's the next little subject here is to digitize or not to digitize. That is the question.
Way to go, smooth brain.
There. When you get calls, when customers call you, do they tell you they want to digitize or not? Or does that come up sometimes with either of you?
They ask about it. Mm-hmm. I've had people call in and say, I have a picture of my logo and want it digitized. Yeah. And I say, well, if you're phrasing the question like that, I would probably outsource your digitizing.
Right. Brand touched on it here a while ago and made some really good points. Digitizing is an art form for one thing. If the three of us were given a logo and told to digitize it, we would do it differently. Does not mean it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Mine would be better, but it's because you might run your fill stitches one way at an angle. You would do a different way. It really is an art form.
And some things have to be digitized based on what you're putting them on too.
Exactly. The material you're going on, a cap logo is going to be digitized differently, from a shirt logo.
Correct.
A jacket back, you can't take a left chest and make it a jacket back.
You can, but it won't look good.
But you got to think where those satin stitches are when they get really big.
Yeah.
The machine's just not going to sew them, but.
Also, there's digitizing specifically for puffy foam.
People think
that they can use the same and it looks, it doesn't look good. It's probably because it's not digitized well for puffy
Which
foam.
Which I see, I've had people call, I've seen stuff online too, like this logo looks horrible. maybe I'm wrong, I think probably 9 times out of 10, it goes to the way it was digitized. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into bad logos. And again, that's another topic is you know, it could be backing, the digitizing, of course. It could be the needles you're using, maybe,
or
the tension on your machine. I mean, there's a lot of things it could be. Digitizing, you can take, if your machine is set up perfectly and you take a crappy design, it's going to sew crappy because if the density's where the stitches are too tight, they pack in too many stitches. If it's not digitized properly for the material, like you said a while ago, some of this performance material, some of these shirts that are coming out now, they're paper thin.
Yeah.
Everybody has issues with them. You know, we're going to have some info on that. And again, it's got to be digitized. I was working on one today with one of Robert Grundy's customers. They're doing performance fabric. They're using, we think, tearaway backing, no overlay, and they're wondering why it doesn't look good. And you know, we help them out. But and if you don't know, you don't know. It's not that you're a smooth brain. It's just that
you don't know. This is going to be a term that comes up way too much.
I love it. I can't believe the old guy come up
it's
with
probably
something
a
you
really
guys didn't
old
know.
Term.
No, it's probably like, I don't know, back in like the 1800s. Yeah, people are like, you're a smooth brain. Like, okay, well, that died. Now it's like you're either dumb or you're smart. There we go.
Back to digitizing. we'll get asked, you know, they'll say, well, I want to digitize. And I never discourage somebody. If you want to digitize, that's fine. We'll sell you software. One thing dealing with us that I'm really proud of is we don't want to sell you something just for the sake of selling you something.
God, no.
We want to make sure. We want to tell you up front, are you sure you want to digitize? Because here's why. The machine is going to make you money. That's your moneymaker is the embroidery machine.
It shoots dollar bills out.
I wish it did. The digitizing is not.
No.
I digitized for a long time. And when you digitize, you have to digitize. You sew it out. If you're like a lot of digitizers, it's never as good as you want it to be. And people say, oh, that's beautiful. And I'm like, oh, that little stitch over there kind of sucks. But it comes to a point where you have to get it done and get it out there. Because most customers, to the lay person who doesn't know embroidery, it all looks good to them. You know, you see some pretty crappy stuff and it's like, how in the world do they sell that?
Yeah.
But if you're sitting in front of a computer digitizing and you're not sewing, you're not making money.
Right.
And again,
and the amount that you can charge to digitize something, that is not lucrative.
Right. So sending it out there's plenty of digitizers we can recommend, but sending it out and getting it done for $5, $10, $20 for left chest or whatever, I don't even know what it costs, to be honest with you.
It is a gamut.
It's not a whole lot, but the outsourced digitizing is getting a lot better than what it was a few years ago. They have very quick turnaround times. They'll even clean up your artwork if your artwork's not very good for a nominal fee, which is what I think is fair. But they'll send you back up. They'll email you back a logo probably the next day. Most of them do. And you sew it out. And I think the first editing charge
Some
is
of them
free.
Will give you a free edit, or they say, okay, we can go back and revise this 2 or 3 times without a fee. Whatever. I mean, it just depends on the person you're getting to do the digitizing.
Yeah. Now, if you are digitizing, Brandon mentioned this a while ago, but that's something you want to do. Now, when we had our business, I did all the digitizing because I never sent anything. I'd always wanted to do it because you do have quality control. If you have a rush order that something needs to be done right now and it's not a big complicated logo, you can do it yourself pretty quickly. You know, you got your machine in to sew it out, make your edits, and you're ready to go. The design is finished. We never charged a digitizing fee when we had our business. And I'm not telling you to charge or not to charge. That's up to you, however you do that. Some businesses, if the order is big enough, some embroidery businesses will not charge for a digitizing fee.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, there's nothing wrong with charging a digitizing fee to someone who comes into your shop. And, you know, you have to pay for that logo if you're outsourcing it.
Yeah.
And if you want to add a dollar or two up to it, that's whatever. But I know when we were screen printing, we charged a fee per screen because you have to burn the screens, set them up, and you You can't do that for free. It's because that's labor.
Yeah. Well, by the same token, so is the digitizing.
Digitizing, like that time labor.
You sit there, you know, you got your vector art in front of you, you get it digitized, you take it and you sew it. You got to go back. That time that you're spending is money. So I'm for charging a fee. I mean, to me, it's like you're kind of giving something away.
Yep.
But that's just my two cents about it. I mean,
No, and there's two ways to look at it. Now, again, if somebody says if they're dead set on digitizing, I just tell them up front, hey, if you're new to this, it is really hard to digitize if you don't understand embroidery, if you don't know what a fill stitch is, underlay, pull compensation, stitch length, if you don't know how to build a design. There's a particular way, as we mentioned a while ago, that a design has to sew. On a cap, it's bottom up, it's center out. You always want to work from the center of anything out. There are exceptions to some things, but for the most part, you always want to push that material, be pushing it out.
Yeah, because
you never want to pull it in because you're going to cause puckering problems and it's going to look
You can look bad. At a design that's been digitized maybe poorly and see that the way that it was set to sew.
Yeah.
You know, just by looking at how it sits on the fabric and what it's doing to the surrounding edges and it's a can of worms.
Yeah, and I'll throw this out there too, really quickly. We get a lot of people asking the new people. Well, what about these automatic digitizing? And again, this is going to be a part of another show when we get James on here. I'm not a fan of automatic digitizing. The computer cannot make the same decisions that you make. It's going to look at that piece of artwork and it's just going to throw stitches in there. It may not be in the right sequence. And people say, well, I'll just go back and edit it. Of course you can, but I can make that thing myself by the time I go back into auto digitizing and fix it. If you like the auto digitizing I've never run into anybody who's like, oh yeah, I auto digitize everything. It's just, I don't know if the industry will ever get there.
It's not really auto-digitizing if you have to go back into it. It's semi-auto-digitizing.
Yeah.
Because if you have to go back in and make corrections, semantics, but I'm just saying.
No. And probably because I'm a digitizer too, but I like having control over how the design is built. You know, when I started, you had to plot the stitches.
Yeah.
Now it's you outline it, you choose the stitch type, and you choose the underlay. It does it all for you. So to me, this is automatic. It's awesome because before you literally
had to go in there stitch by stitch.
You literally had to plot every stitch. I mean, you know, years ago, and that was very time consuming. And digitizers were getting honestly, a left chest would cost you $250 for 5,000, 7,000 stitches. It was about $21 to $27 a thousand or more than that.
Yeah.
And when designs became easier to digitize and more readily available, that's kind of when embroidery took off for the home business. You never had anybody in your home much back in the 80s. There were a few, but not that many people doing it unless they did stock designs. Mm-hmm. Because to have a custom logo made, somebody come and want a dozen shirts and you're charging $250 for the design, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But now it's more accessible. It's easier. And I would tell, I don't want to harp on this digitizing, but I would tell people if you want to digitize, you know, Wilcom has something called decorating.
Oh yeah.
Decorating. Sorry. That is the entry level digitizing that lets you do simple stuff.
Yep.
But when I learned, no one really taught me. I watched a good digitizer, but you can learn so much if you just put a design into the machine and just watch it sew. Mm. Watch it from beginning to end and look at how it's built. Look at the underlay, underlay is so important.
I'm
just a huge, huge proponent of underlay. Most people, they'll say, that's too many stitches. Well, do you want it to look good? Or you want to put out 20 pieces of garbage? Or you want to put out
garbage,
you know, 10 pieces of really good stuff?
Garbage or gold.
But, I'll tell you about this. I was down in Alabama. We got a big customer down there that I'm not going to mention their names, but they do flags, gigantic flags. I showed you that picture. Their operators are digitizers. And I thought that was fascinating. Every operator digitizes their own logo. And they pay them well. They pay them for it too. And I asked the embroidery manager, and the owner, I'm like, how do you guys do this? And they said, well, think about it. We're doing flags. Some of them have 500,000 stitches, mm-hmm. and they have these specialized, we built them giant wide field machines that wouldn't fit in this room.
Huge.
And what else they have to do to sit there? They change the bobbin, but they're digitizing.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, man, that's a good idea. Instead of them sitting there mm-hmm. and waiting for a thread break.
Yeah, and you think about how long that takes to sew that.
Oh, it takes forever. Yeah. Oh, they have flags that take a day and a half. And those machines are sewing at 800 to 1,000 stitches a minute. But, I thought that was, when they told me that they all did their own digitizing. And, you know, something else, too, is, now, in their defense, they're doing big blocks of fill stitches. Now, it's not like they're doing a lot of detail either. Not taking anything away from the people doing the digitizing, because you got to know what you're doing, and it has to sew a particular way. And their work is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But it is big blocks of fill. So when you're sitting there waiting on a block of probably 50,000 stitches to sew, you've got time to...
Yeah.
Twiddle your fingers.
Take a nap and let's do a podcast.
Yeah. So, anyway, we kind of got on that digitizing thing. But
what you're saying, too, about watching, I love to watch a design sew because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm still learning the ins and outs of it. But if I can watch it sew, I can kind of tell you, like, that's probably going to look really good or it's probably going to look really bad just by the way it sews. And
you can tell in the first 5 minutes what it's going to look like. I can tell just by looking at the... If they put underlay underneath it, you know, I mean, things will look good on a piece of backing.
Yeah.
But when you actually put it on a garment or what it's designed to sew on, that's the real test.
Yeah, agreed.
How are we on time? We good on time?
Oh, yeah, we're fine. So we'll wrap this up by talking about getting into specialty hoops and frames and just touch on it briefly, because that could probably be a whole other podcast
It's going to be.
You know, a lot of people... ask about, I think the most common thing people ask about, because they are so awesome, is the magnetic hoops. Yeah. But you're increasing your price too by jumping into that. And to me, it's like a buy once, cry once thing. What's funny?
Smooth brain. I don't think I've ever heard that either.
See, we're learning educated. So smooth brain.
Oh, I use that.
Buy once, cry once.
I probably use that daily on the phone.
Really?
Yeah, because people ask, you know, how much does it cost? I'm like, well, it's expensive. You buy once and you cry once, and then you have it for a long time. Yeah, you're welcome, world.
Can you use smooth brain in a sentence?
No, you can. Yeah, I can. I won't.
With all due respect.
With all due respect.
I'm going to be listening to his conversations with customers. Dude, I guarantee he's going to say, don't be a smooth brain.
No,
and buy this.
Swear on my life, I will never say that. But you will hear me say my other catchphrase. Yeah. But no, you talk about like the name clamps and sock. I mean, there's so many, and we could get really into the weeds on this. But I think if you are a specialty company, like if you're going to be doing socks, some of those investments I think are worthwhile. Yeah. Some of the things you can do without, they look really good. They're going to save you time, but you probably don't need them up front. And stuff you can always purchase later. That's kind of what I would say.
Yeah, one thing I always tell customers, and here's another thing going back to the embroidery startup person too, and we did the same thing when we got into it. You have an idea what you want to do. Well, I'm going to do the XX. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sew socks, for example, or I'm just going to sew caps. So I'm going to do. Well, when somebody comes and says, oh, what about, you know, these 25 shirts or 50 shirts.
Well, you
want to turn that down? No.
You didn't go into your business thinking, I want to do dance bunny
dance
uniforms.
Bunnies. No, I did
but
not.
Sometimes your clientele will decide for you what you're going to do, and that's okay. If it's going to keep you busy and keep the lights on, go for it.
But my point to this was, I would not go buy a bunch of specialty frames and accessories until you need them. And you can always call us. If you have something that you want to sew and you can't get it into a regular blue tubular hoop, there's something out there that's going to help you.
Yeah.
And it may not be our product. And we have no problem pointing you in the right direction to find something that's going to help you reach your goal of sewing that item. Because every major manufacturer of accessory hoops makes stuff for Bairdin.
Yep.
Because we're one of the largest embroidery machine companies in the world. So they'd be crazy not to. But Yeah, we're happy to steer you in the right direction.
I thought I was going to sneeze.
What was that?
I thought I was going to sneeze. Like, I really felt like something was about to happen with my smooth brain.
See, you said the word. But as Brand said, you know, clamping systems, the Mighty Hoops is a phenomenon. I wish I'd have been the person to invent those. I mean, I've known the Mac family for a long time, and they're good people. And
they How many fingers do you think have been lost due to the magnetic hoops?
Well, I will tell you, when they first started with those, they had a light medium and a heavy magnet. And I'm telling you, I've been pinched on it a couple times.
They're scary.
But, yeah.
They work
they're
too
kinda,
well.
They're kind of getting overused with some stuff. I mean, people are using them on like a light shirt or something.
To me, I think it's just the ease of
it is. Using you don't have so it's. I'm lazy. We got them. I mean, just about every size here, and I grab it. Yeah, every
it's
time.
The first thing I'm going to pull off of that hanger over there.
I mean, they're great.
And you ready to go?
Yeah. If you got something, you know, Carhartt jackets. Anything thick, tote bags, we use them for tote bags at shows. Mm-hmm. I mean, our hoops are good. We make a double height hoop, and it's going to work for 90% of what you do. But if you've got some heavier items, the blue hoops are tough. You have to expand the ring, and you risk it popping off the hoop, maybe. I mean, there's a fine line there to get it where you get it too tight or not tight enough. And those magnetic hoops, they eliminate the guesswork in it. They're great. And I recommend them.
They're good for smooth brains.
I'm sorry?
They're good for smooth brains.
I wouldn't know. My brain is very wrinkled.
Yeah, I'm speaking to myself.
But, you know, bag clamps, alligator, you know, we got the alligator clamp thing. We call it the mighty, what's it called?
I call it the hungry
gator
hippo.
Gator clamp. Alligator clamp. Chomp.
Dinosaur claw.
No, we got the new pocket frame now since our machines have the smaller cylinder arm, so we got the adjustable pocket frame. So there's things out there, and don't get frustrated if you can't find something to sew a particular item. No, let us know. We'll guide you in the right direction. Like
I said, it's probably out there.
Yeah,
we'll steer you in the right direction. I tell people all the time to go look at certain things on. You know, third-party people because...
Yeah, Hooptech.
Yeah.
Mighty Hoop. Who else? There's a couple other companies out there that make stuff. And if it makes your job easier, hey, I'm all for it. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a Baird product.
All right. I think that about wraps it up. Anything we need to cover in closing?
Well, we got the...
Fort Worth.
Fourth show next.
Yes. The Fort Soon. Worth show is September 10th through the 12th, and we're booth 307. Mm-hmm. Please come out if you're close. We would love to see you.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Fort Worth is a fun town. Might be my favorite trade show town.
It's pretty cool because I won't be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun.
Not your territory, bro.
Yet. Mr. Worldwide. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
No, it's a lot. I always love doing that show because Fort Worth, they talk like I do. They got that little Southern drawl. So,
yeah, I get pretty aggravated with people talking about my accent.
Really? What accent? Just kidding.
You're number one on the list. No, I'm kidding. That bothered me. Yeah, and I did see somebody asking about did we go over all the trade shows that we're doing? Did we do that last episode?
I don't think we mentioned Charlotte.
No, somebody was asking about.
We are going to be at Charlotte.
That's the GPX show, which was formerly the
NBM.
Mm-hmm.
The artist formerly known as.
Yeah, but we'll have a booth there. We're only going to take a couple single heads. It's a really small show, but come out and see us.
Charlotte. Charlotte's my favorite city, man.
What's that?
No, y'all like Fort Worth. I like Charlotte.
Oh,
I don't. I don't care where I go. I just show up.
Yeah. But,
not to Fort Worth, though, because you're not invited.
No, I won't be there anyway. Even if I was invited, I wouldn't go, just out of spite.
Well, you're not.
I'm going to fly out there. And I'll be
like, hey, show up on the booth.
I'll be there.
You can't expense it if you do it, does it?
What you don't? Well, you would know.
Yeah. No, but Charlotte's in our backyard. It's only about 70 miles down the road, so it's kind of hard for us not to do that show. Yeah. But if you can make...
It's also really fun. I liked that show.
It is. Charlotte's fun. Downtown Charlotte. There's a lot of good restaurants and things to do. So
But, I feel like the only you judge only things based on where you can eat at.
Not necessarily. I mean, you've been. I'm not. Am I picky when it comes to restaurants? I have the places
you
I
are
like
picky.
To well, when I go to I'm getting barbecue when I go to Texas. That's a given. We go to the same place every time, and I know you're a vegetarian, but we try to look out for you. Look, if they've got a tater, you can
just
a tater. I'll buy you a tater. I promise you, you can have a tater. Have some brisket.
Yeah. Well, yes, you do. You think about places to eat.
Well, when you work all day, yeah, and it's kind of a little bit of a reward. I mean, I'm not a food. Would you think I'm a foodie?
I don't even know what that means.
It's people eat a lot of food.
Well, then I'm that.
We're all foodies. Yeah.
No, I mean, over the years, there's places we always go to the same places because we know the food's good. And
so you got to expand. Atmosphere. You have to expand your horizon. No, like in the places I go, like no. I will go somewhere different.
Not I'm me.
Like, oh, let me check.
I'm
this
a creature
out.
Of habit.
Okay, well, that's
Atlantic
your
City. We go to the Mexican restaurant every time we're going.
Well, while y'all are eating there. I'm going to venture off into the city. Let the wind take me. All right, we're going to get out of here because this is
getting
way
too
long.
And way off course.
My brain is smoothing out as we speak. So, anything in closing?
No, just talk about shows. Okay. We've gotten some really nice comments.
Yeah, thanks. Seriously.
On our YouTube channel. Thank you very much. And keep the questions coming, what you'd like for us to do. And again, doesn't mean we're going to do every little thing, but if we get enough people asking for particular
topics or guests. Yeah. We are trying to accommodate. But, we do want to keep it, I guess, geared towards embroidery and not so much going off into other tangents because it can get, well, we did that today.
Yeah. We'll be better. Get better. This is the second podcast.
It's
third.
It's third.
I sat here and told you.
I forgot.
Here's what we time traveled and then we came back and
we want it to be a little bit entertaining too. And the thing about podcasts is there's some idle chatter and you can fast forward through the stuff.
I mean, you know, it's not going to be for everybody.
But I think we covered some pretty good stuff and we gave you guys, if you're getting started in embroidery, there's some things that you can glean from what we talked about.
Yeah. And we are here to help you. Like if you call in, mm-hmm. I mean, we talk to people all day long and there's a lot of new people getting into it and they want to be guided a little bit as to a direction because it can be overwhelming. And like we said before, we don't want you to get something that you do not need.
Exactly.
And I know me personally, like I'd rather you buy the least expensive machine if that's going to be suited to what you need and don't buy all these accessories. Like just get what's going to make you successful. Don't buy all this other stuff if it's not going to help you out.
Yeah.
And if you want information on any of the machines or any of the products, you can email us at sales@berrettin.com.
Yep.
If you have any comments on the podcast,
yep.
That email address is berrettinstitchfiles.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to spell that again. Man, I look like an idiot.
I listen to that podcast. And I'm like, he kept wanting to put that E before that.
No,
L.
I don't even know what I was saying.
I don't either.
I really think that I had an aneurysm.
You may have.
My brain smoothed out.
I listened to that first episode this morning at the gym, and I was you got to that. You got to that spell. I literally laughed out loud.
Yeah,
and everybody's looking at me. And
I'm sorry. This will happen if I'm on here because I don't really have all my brain cells. Make sure you email us. We do appreciate the comments. If you're a negative Nancy, keep it to yourself. Because I will find you. I'm just kidding. So make sure, again, go to YouTube. If you're a video file, go to YouTube. Yeah, hey. I use that. Yeah. If you're an audio file, wherever you get your podcast, please subscribe, like, thumbs up, all those good things. Leave us comments, things you want to see here. And we'll see you guys on the next one. Adios.